Welcome to a special episode of The Road Less Traveled. I am your host, DB, and on today's episode, I'm going to talk about, you know, a little epiphany I just had. I had an epiphany while I was in the shower, which of course is where most epiphanies occur, at least to me. I found out, apropos of nothing, I don't even know what I was doing or talking about, probably putting shampoo in my eyes. I realized that I am the reluctant leader. If it was a Fallout video game or some adventuring video game, whatever, I would be the character trait of reluctant leader. Because for whatever reason, whatever job I'm at, even in prison, like I had a job, to where I was a firefighter. For those of you that don't know, who are just tuning into this special episode, surprise, I was in prison, and that's actually what this podcast is about. Check out the intro if you need to. But yeah, even in prison, I was made a black hat while I was a firefighter. Black hat was a crew leader, and I had to oversee basically a bunch of infants who also fought fires, which was nigh impossible. Had a ton of fun. It was great. We did do a lot of good work. I can't say that we didn't, but some of it was because, yes, they followed, not my orders. They definitely, like, no convict is going to follow another convict's orders unless it's, like, possibly part of a gang hierarchy or something like that. But, like, I am not the boss of anybody, and I almost even got in a couple fights because of that, and I'm just like, hey, guys, I'm just trying to relay some information here. I am only telling you what the crew boss is telling me to tell you. I'm not, you know, I'm not better than you, whatever. And thankfully, like, usually it was just mutual respect. Because I was like, dude, I do not want to fucking be here. But, I mean, I'm working just as hard, if not harder, than you guys. Like, you can see I'm pulling my weight. I'm not just telling you to do stuff and, you know, resting here. So yeah, we got a lot of firefighting stuff done. But yeah, reluctant hero for some odd reason. And I swear to God, like, it just fucking kept happening while I was in prison specifically. And this is a big spoiler for the story that I'm going to tell for this episode. And I don't even know if I can release this episode yet because I'm not done with parole. I got just over a year, like a year and a month, something like that, maybe 2 months. Because I don't really count, you know? That would just drive you insane. I couldn't do it while I was in jail. I definitely couldn't do it while I was in prison. Although I didn't need to in prison. I went a little quicker. I did go back and I got to find it in my notes, but there's a tally list that I made. I didn't, like, keep a tally sheet like I was on a, you know, deserted island or something. But I made a tally sheet to represent the amount of days that I served or could serve, like, and I represented it as, like, this is what the cost of a life looks like. And so it just showed, or at least I was hoping to show, like, I understood it. Like, I took away more than the amount of days too that I tallied. You know what I mean? I took away everything that person was and could be. So tallies are just tallies. Like, I took away experiences. I took away the connection to loved ones, family, friends. Like, I do understand that. And I, again, if you're just jumping into this podcast, that's what this is about. That's what this podcast is about. You'll find, you know, my wry and dark sense of humor throughout, but you will also find the episodes where there's a more nuanced and a little more emotional, emotionally charged things going on. I haven't broken down in a while, which I feel like it's good progress, but it's not like, you know, it's not like, you know, when a breakdown's coming, or at least I don't. Maybe some of you guys can schedule it out for the weekends or know that it's going to be a shit day because you're like, well, by the end of the day, I will be breaking down at least. That should be fun. So, yeah, I'm still on parole, so I probably can't post this episode just yet because that's one of the things that is holding this podcast back. Some people, you know, have kind of stumbled upon it. I've done a little bit of sharing here and there, but I haven't been able to market. I guess it's kind of the wrong word because I'm not trying to market this story. That's not what that is. Share, I guess, or try to. I'm not, I don't know. It's a very confusing thing because some of this I had to do because, like, counseling worked, and that's a quotation mark. I didn't quite need counseling. I need my counselor as a resource, and I definitely utilized her to help me get things done. Like, she was an excellent tool in being a kind of go-between between my case officers, parole officers, etc., because she worked in the same office building as those people. She saw them day to day. And sometimes they're very busy. I mean, they have, I can only imagine, dozens, maybe hundreds of cases. I don't know. Probably a lot. Tons. They got to see a lot of people. So having her, I had to go in person to counseling, to the parole and probation office. I had no problem with that. You know, I was never intimidated by those people. It's not like I was showing up high or drunk or, I don't know, holding some sort of weapon. Although some people did. Like, you could see people were actively high in line, just like, you know, I don't want to explain the telltale signs, but, you know, overly fidgety, extra blinky or not blinking, giant dilated eyes, super, like, rapid movements, just being skeezy. That's a great way to describe it. Skeezy. Is that still a word? Was that even a word? I don't know. I'll look it up later. So, one of the reluctant kind of leader things that just came out of nowhere, I was at my job this is when I was at the halfway house. So, for anyone who doesn't know the process of prison, it goes very straightforward. You usually have your crime, then you go to jail, then you get sentenced, then you go to prison, and then you go to usually maximum security prison, then medium. Then minimum. I thankfully jumped from maximum to minimum because my case, it was a nonviolent accident, so they considered it as such. Even though there was a death, it's still a Class B felony, but considered an accident. So they allowed me to fast track to a minimum security facility. Fast track is also a quotation kind of term, term. Because it took me 2.5 years to get there? Yeah, I mean, it took me a while to get there. Some of that was because it took me 2 years to get sentenced, but that is an aside. So at the minimum security facility, I got to be a firefighter, got to work on buildings and grounds, then I got to work at the governor's mansion, which was super awesome, and then I got to move to a halfway house, and at the halfway house, it was mandatory that you got a job, which I was looking forward to that. Like, I would love, yes, give me a job. I would love to get a job. I can, go find one. I'm ready to work. I'm ready to get money. I'm ready to support myself. That was... I can't remember which episode I speak about that on. It's not ego. It's something else. I don't know. I've always, I don't know, pride. There you go. That's one of them. I'm very prideful, you know? I want to be able to earn my way, not have to rely on somebody else, and not because I have a problem with accepting, you know, the kindness of people. It's because I don't want that feeling of being like a burden, you know? I don't want that kindness to then turn into like a handout and then that handout to turn into like, okay, I'm kind of taking here, taking advantage. So, and I feel like that could be a very quick slippery slope. You know, for me, this is, again, my own head. This isn't even an experience I've ever had. It's, I don't know, it's just ingrained in me for some reason. So I had to override that. It was very uncomfortable. And I definitely had to ask for help. Not even just one time. Like, I had to, not constantly, but I had to at least until I could support myself through working as a firefighter and then getting an actual job. I had to ask, for help from outside, from family and friends. Who's going to pay for stamps? I couldn't. I didn't have any money. Well, I did. I exhausted my savings. I need to look up figures, and that would be a very boring episode just to prattle off a bunch of statistics to you guys. But I do feel like some of it would be incredibly fascinating. Last episode I ended on with, I think the figure was $74 billion industry a year for the prison industries in just America. I'm like 95% sure that I remember that correctly. If you feel like Googling it, go for it. So, huge profitable industry, this prison thing. And I had to pay, it was like over $1 a minute for phone time. That was expensive, very expensive. And it ate up to, I think you could only do 15-minute phone calls, and there was a connection fee in jail. So that, yeah, I just drained money. I couldn't. It was so fucked up, man. That could be an episode in and of itself. That was so sad. There were so many, fucking 15 minutes is not long enough, guys. There's so many conversations that got cut short. So many tear-filled voices that just got cut off because maybe there wasn't enough money. I'm not saying, like, sometimes there wasn't. I burned through hundreds of dollars, and I just, at a certain point, you can't do that. It's unrealistic. So I had to shift over to letter writing to kind of supplement that, and that thankfully gave me something to do. And I explained on a different episode that I signed up for a pen pal service. So I loved writing. It was great. And I also had conversations with my pen pals. And they were kind enough to use some of their money for those conversations on the phone. And I used a little bit here and there when I was, at this point, firefighting. But yeah, the beginning was so rough. It was just, it's so weird to bring up. It kind of feels distant now. And it is. That happened over 8 years ago. That's crazy to think about. It was crazy to think about that I spent a sixth of my life in prison. It's not crazy to think that was the inciting event was 8 years ago. Eight years doesn't really mean anything, because I keep thinking, like, about the other person's side. Not the person that's gone, because, I mean, I do think about them. That's not what I mean. I mean, I think about the people that are still here to feel that loss, their family, you know? They got to be having, I don't know, maybe they have really rough days. Hopefully, they're less rough. Some are good, some are, I don't know, memory is a weird thing. It could be a crazy situation where I'm the only one constantly thinking about this. Maybe I haven't moved on, maybe they have, maybe they've found peace. I don't know. That's an odd concept to me. Because, I mean, there's no way to confirm this. It's not like I'm going to reach out. And I guess that, therein lies the problem. How do you solve a problem when you're missing certain pieces? Or you know the solution, but you just can't do it. Oh, it's exhausting. It really is. So, God, I'll just launch into this other story here because, you know, we got to go somewhere. So, yeah. Wow, I forgot how roundabout I got. So, story one. Reluctant leader. While I was at my job at the halfway house, the bartender, I worked at a restaurant at the time. The bartender there, I could just tell she was doing some sort of downers. I thought it was heroin possibly or whatever, maybe like sleeping pills, something. It wasn't good. Like she was definitely loopy certain days, very cognitive most days. But then you could see like she'd wander off to the bathroom, be there for, you know, a few minutes, if not longer. And then just like 10, maybe 5 minutes after that, just be zonked out. Just almost falling over. So here's the thing. She just completely falls out. Like I come around the corner with one of my support staff. And, oh my God, she's just on the ground. She's just on the ground. I'm not the manager, by the way. I'm just like a server at the time. And so I just look at him and he looks at me and he has no idea what to do. Like this kid is he's a darker guy, but now he's looking kind of pale. He's definitely looking light. So I was like, dude, just like, go get the phone, go call 911. I'll try and prop her up, check for a pulse, whatever. Just like, obviously, go get help, man. He's like, oh, okay, great. Like, he jumps into action. And so his reaction was like fear, panic. Oh my God, what the hell? My reaction inside was like, fuck, man, I got to deal with this. Are you kidding me? Because like, I'm the server, but there's no managers here. So this restaurant was terrible. That's a completely different story. It's out of business, by the way. And the guy was a total fraud. But anyway, long story. So I'm like, great, I got to deal with this. I think she's alive. I got to potentially save her now. And it's, you know, it's just morally right, I guess. I don't really care about this person, you know? I don't really know much about her. It shouldn't really matter, but like, I don't particularly care. I'm more or less indifferent. I'm like, I have to save this person's life because, like, one, it seems like nobody else is going to. It's like you're in the restaurant and someone's fucking choking and, like, no one does anything and everyone kind of hopes somebody else does something. And then usually maybe one or two people do. But there's kind of those moments where everyone's like, ah, fuck. And, like, do I have to be the person? A lot of you, come on, look within yourselves. You know it's not you. Hang on, I'm going to take a drink here. That is very good Coke. I'm not editing that out. I don't care. So, I'll just skip ahead. She's totally fine. Like, my freaking support staff, he shows up with the phone and hands it to me because he's one useless. I basically have her, I haven't really moved her. You know, I've kind of made sure her head isn't moving. I have cupped it gently, but I haven't moved it. I haven't turned her head in any way. I have lightly confirmed, like, that I can feel her breathing and I can see her chest rising. I didn't check for a pulse, although I noticed her eyelids were fluttering slightly, and I relayed all this information to the person on the phone. I didn't particularly mention the fact that I had noticed her wander off to the bathroom, although I did say that when she had first gotten to work, she seemed completely fine. And that shortly into her shift, she seemed noticeably different and then fell out. So EMT showed up. She was totally fine. We fired her. I mean, it wasn't, I guess, a we, but I did at that point. I had a reporter. And you know what? She didn't even get fired that time. That's the fucking weird thing. Because, like, obviously nobody saw what she did in the bathroom, so we couldn't directly confirm. I don't know why I keep saying we. The manager couldn't directly confirm any of that stuff. But I sat her down. She was crying. This was a different time. She was crying because she's like, oh my God, I'm a fucker, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you are. You are. But that's fine. You know, everyone fucks up. It's okay to actually acknowledge that. And that moment where you're just, you know, consumed by tears and you're utterly distraught, that's okay. It sucks. It doesn't feel good. It's pretty rough. But that's all right. Like, latch on to that moment. Because you're a fuck-up doesn't mean anything. You're still alive. You're recognizing the fact that there is a problem. And unfortunately, this problem is you. But you can do better. Every single person can do better. You just have to do it. And it's not easy. But I do remember reading somewhere, whatever book it was. This was in jail. This was in county. I read a ton of books. It said change. Everyone keeps thinking that change, you know, just takes a long time. Like, it's a gradual process or, you know, it's incremental or whatever. But change is instantaneous. It happens the second you decide it. If you decide you are going to work out, well, okay, boom, you're done. You're doing it now. You're working out. You have to do it. You have to go every single day or create a routine or do whatever. But you got to follow through with it. But once you decide to do that, just start doing it from the beginning, of course. Don't launch right in. So it's the act of deciding to change that is the act of change. Because there's Unfortunately, there's the other subtle change. I think it was a quote of where I'm working right now. They usually try to put inspirational stuff on the board, and it is, for the most part, boring as fuck. But this one was good. This one was okay. This was talking about the fact, what was it? Laziness is the silent killer, which I think they messed up because Dune, the book, if I'm not mistaken, has the quote of fear is the silent killer, but laziness also is the silent killer. That's true, because laziness is also a decision. You decide to go out, have fun, or stay in, do other things, whatever, be not productive. You decide to do that. That is a choice. So you have decided that that is the change or non-change you want in your life. Yeah, that's okay. You can be consumed by stagnancy. That's unfortunate. I'm trying to do this. I have pitched and queried to over like 70 agents and publicists. I'm hoping to hear back from my book. Gotten quite a few rejections so far. However, that's to be expected. That's just the game, man. A lot of the rejections are coming pretty quick, which means they either haven't read it, didn't have time to read it, or too overwhelmed. I have received some of those. Whatever. And you know what's funny about this episode? I'm actually not going to tell that story. Because I don't have enough time. And the weird thing, like I said in the beginning, was I can't really, like, there's certain details that I want to say. Like, I would love to say where it happened. It's kind of a major thing. But, like, I wasn't the reluctant hero in this one. This one was, like, I mean, just because my bartender fell out, I still did all the right things. Like, I was still there for her. When the EMT showed up, like, I had her stabilized, and I was, like, on the phone with the whoever was on the line, the operator, I guess. I did all those things. I was like, this fucking, I hope this girl doesn't die. That's such a long day. Again, that's my sense of humor. Please don't think less of me. But the other event, the other story was, wanted to tell you guys, like, it was a life or death situation. It was a spring into action kind of situation. But that's just, you know what? That's going to be a teaser. I'm going to tell that story like 9 months from now. Every single one of you is going to forget about it. And I'm going to reference this episode. I'm like, oh my God. See what I did? It was like Tarantino. Anyway, I'm just like blathering at this point. So guys, thank you actually for joining me on a special episode. This was just like an epiphany episode. So I might post this early, I might post this as regularly scheduled, but either way, whenever you guys hear it, I thank you for tuning in, and I do hope that you tune into the next episode of The Road Less Traveled. Take care, guys.